This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack
and Michael B. for everything new, now, and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, why the Apple fight about walled gardens is about to get epic.
Plus, we tell you what you need to know about former President Trump back on Facebook.
Also on the show, we tell you where in the world you'll find a 3D printed house.
And we dive in why you'll be able to host a Twitter Spaces space if you have 600 followers.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
So much news, so little time. Amber, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's still here, the world.
Yeah, but you're vaccinated. You've gotten your first vaccine shot.
I've gotten my first shot. That's very exciting. In fact, while recording this, I am celebrating my 2-week vaxiversary. I don't know if that's actually a word.
But, hashtag. I feel like the hashtag is going to trend. Vaxiversary.
I know. I mean, listen, I shouldn't downplay it, because the fact that we even have vaccines at this early stage in a global pandemic is a scientific accomplishment that I never expected to take place. I'm so thrilled about that. I just hope that this summer we can maybe get back to some normal things, right? You know, maybe seeing people,
especially
that
in
kind
Canada.
Of
yeah, like in Canada, obviously, especially in Toronto, where we've been in lockdown and a stay at home orders for the last 6 or however many more months.
Yeah, 14.
14, whatever it is. Like, it literally hasn't ended. But I hope you're right, and I think that we're starting to see some positive movement in the right direction. So hopefully, at least internally, we can start to open up. But let's get right to it. Let's take a look at all of the headlines and what people are talking about.
Okay, so some big news here, according to CNN Business. Epic Games and Apple are continuing to fight over consoles and wall gardens. You probably remember the story in the past in terms of Epic, which of course makes Fortnite, and the conversation about how they were in this big fight with Apple because Apple was saying that they would take 30% of not only app purchases, but in-app purchases, which would apply to a lot of what's happening in the Fortnite video game. So they are in court kind of duking this out. I mean, there's a lot more to it than just that. But I think at the end of the day, I think we have to remember that this is a fight that's probably going to go on for some time.
I think you're right. And it is interesting, because when things, started to heat up this week, and if you look at all of the articles, a lot of this is getting a lot of interest because of the precedent it could set with regards to something like this. Because, of course, it does surround that anti-competitive behavior by companies in different industries that seem or do have a monopoly. And so, of course, at the end of the day, when there is a monopoly in certain industries, the most of the time, or pretty much every time, the person that loses out is, of course, the end consumer. We're the ones that end up having to pay a lot more. So it will be fascinating to see how this unfolds. And, Apple has done lots of good things in the past and been leaders, but obviously there's other thing, I'm sure, like, people will also agree there's lots of things that they could do better to improve things as well. And this is one of that behaviors, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will keep an eye on this story. Another story we've been watching is, of course, Facebook's decision.
I didn't want to talk about this, but we have to, right?
We do, to potentially let former President Donald Trump back onto Facebook. Now, this is a moving story. So a lot is going to happen over the next few days. But most recently, what I have read is that Facebook,
there was actually
no
decision.
Well, they've basically upheld the decision that Facebook.
But they kicked it back, didn't they? They kicked it back to Facebook to say, you have to now decide if Trump should be president, the former president Trump should be banned forever. So the board isn't doing it. It's now back to Facebook or the oversight committee.
Well, according to 3 hours ago, they have upheld the action on the Donald Trump decision. So You know, maybe, you know, at one point they said they're going to kick it back to him. But my understanding is that they basically have upheld this decision. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't mean that Facebook can't reverse it. That's why it's one of these stories that we really don't love to do right now, because every few hours it's changing in terms of the rules. But, you know, you're not going to see him back on there likely anytime soon. I think that's fair to say.
Do you think, though, we're going to see very strict policy, distinctive, clear policy changes in for companies like Facebook as a result of this? Because also, that's something you can flag. And you're like, well, you know, they keep going back and forth. And yeah, we've got this oversight committee, but then they can decide, you know, this is fine for now. But then Facebook still has to make their own decision, which gives a lot of power still to Mark Zuckerberg, which again, is also a hot button of discussion.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, I've been listening a lot to this story a lot over the past few days. And I would just say that I think it would be very hard, even if Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook recognizes that they could potentially, you know, get a lot of traffic from President or former President Donald Trump joining Facebook again. I think it would be a very hard decision for them to actually make. I mean, once someone is sort of kicked off that platform, I think it's hard for them to take him back, because there could be consequences to that depending on, you know, what happens after that. So I don't think it's going to be an easy thing. And I don't think, certainly it's not going to be an overnight thing.
Right. Well, again, it's not the last time we're going to be, you know, talking and discussing this topic about, you know, what happens to people when they do get deplatformed.
Absolutely. A fun story to end our headlines with is about a Dutch couple who has moved into Europe's first fully 3D printed house. This is from The Guardian. And this house looks like a pretty cool house. It almost reminds me of a sort of modern and sophisticated mobile home. And it has a little porch outside. And it looks quite comfortable. I love this idea. You know, the article says the new home is in the shape of a boulder, and it's the first legally a legal property that where people can live with load-bearing walls made entirely with 3D printing. So it's a pretty incredible accomplishment, really.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, all of the permits and everything you would expect just from any other home that's built or placed somewhere. But I do love this idea of affordability, sustainability, and it's good to see, you know, different products and ways we're looking at, particularly in the construction business, the way we're looking at building things. And obviously, this could be the start of, you know, future communities. And we see a lot of these starting to pop up. And it actually is quite a beautiful home inside as well.
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think, you know, we've heard a lot about 3D printing over the years, and it's been something that has sort of gradually caught on. I remember going to a 3D printing lab many years ago and printing a keychain. So never did I think that someone would build a house that they could actually live in with this technology. But I certainly do love this idea. And lumber is really expensive right now, Michael. So this is
well, I always think of the three little pigs. It's like, you know, wood, I'll blow your house down, and bricks. And I was like, concrete seems pretty good, especially given
straw,
all the weather changes.
Straw. Yeah. I think it's
straw is not good. Oh yeah. When I say wood, don't listen to me, kids. I don't know the stories. Okay. When we return, we find out what Hollywood celebrities are really doing online during the pandemic.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Power Friend.
Lots of people have been taking to social media during the pandemic for a bunch of different reasons, and celebrities are no exception. So to join us to talk about some of the hits and misses when it comes to viral trends, we have the celebrity who always hits. Hello, Brittle Star.
Wow, I'm the celebrity that always hits? Is that what you just introduced me as?
You can just read into that how you want. Yes, wow. That's how
okay, I'm going to take it as like a success. You. I'm good.
Well,
how are you guys doing?
Good. And we have to say that you have just been pumping out content throughout this time. So maybe we can kind of start with you. You've been responding to the news, and within an hour or two, you have videos up. How is the grind going for Brittle Star and the fam?
It's been going all right. I mean, I've set up all the means of production here pretty, at the ready. So if there's something that I can do quickly, I can do it pretty quickly, which is great. And of course, the more you do it, the faster you get. But I mean, that's the cool thing about, creating content on social media. Is that I can react like way faster than any network can react. And it's essentially just me that's doing audio, camera, editing, acting, scripting, and everything. So if I want to do something, like you said, something might hit and I'll sort of wait and see how it plays out. And then I can do something the next couple hours and get it out that afternoon or whatever. I mean, that's kind of the fun part about social media for sure.
It seems though, it does seem you have to kind of approach it from a formulaic perspective and really focus on what you're doing. It doesn't seem like you can just pump stuff out and hope for the best, because there can be very negative repercussions on any efforts on social media. And the reason why I bring that up and ask this question and want to get your thoughts on this is we've seen lots of celebrities, for example, during the pandemic, take to social media, start to try and do viral campaigns, get people to try and engage with videos for whatever reason. And some of them seem to work and some of them seem to fall flat.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, one of the interesting things about social video is that it's like one of the last shared experiences we have, like in general, never mind the pandemic. You add the pandemic to it and we don't even have the benefit of concerts or that type of live performance. So it's if you can create something that people can relate to, that people can share and they can use as self-expression, then it becomes part of a shared experience in the community. And that kind of feels good to be part of something that other people are experiencing at the same time. And I think you'll notice like at the beginning of the pandemic when social content was happening, and of course the infamous Imagine video that Gal Gadot started, and lovely intent, really, really lovely. But it was much more of a, we're just sort of sending this information out to you. In a sense, it was kind of a shared experience because everyone didn't like it. But I mean, apart from that, it was much more, I'm broadcasting to you, as opposed to, hey, this is actually happening. We're all going through this together. Here's some, home truths, as it were, that we can all agree that we are experiencing together. And I think that's what makes it really, really potent. And I think that being able to, be a voice for that is a pretty fortunate position. I'm certainly considering myself pretty fortunate in that regard.
It is interesting, too, to see how some celebrities have come out on top. If I had to pick one, hopefully Michael will think of someone as well, I would say Sarah Silverman, if you're a fan of hers. Mm-hmm. If you watch her Instagram feed, basically what she's doing is every single day or a couple of days, she's basically answering questions that people send in for her podcast. And it's just a nice tight shot. She's got a good microphone and she's just kind of riffing. And it's very authentic and organic. And I've really enjoyed listening to her. And it's a lot of the conversations are about her own experiences and the evolution of her perspective on certain issues. So I think that there are some people, Brittle Star, that are able to kind of get this right. They understand that authentic experience. Ryan Reynolds is another one.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you have people watching this content, and if you can deliver a message where they feel like, okay, we're not alone, because I think even though we're so connected, it's still been a tremendously lonely time. And if you can turn to social media and really use the best parts of it to sort of have content out there that people go, yeah, this is how I feel, or this person is expressing an authentic reaction to something, then that's incredibly powerful. And I think it's incredibly good too, because it sort of makes you feel again, less alone in the world. And that's a good thing.
Well, one of my favorites, which I absolutely love seeing all of the content that she creates, is Jennifer Garner. And she's actually up for a Webby Award as a result of all of her content that she's been posting. Now, of course, she does everything from showing what it's like being a mom during the pandemic and trying to school her kids and work at the same time. And just like everybody else, she's divorced, so she has to also manage different households, all that kind of thing. But she's very... very honest in all of her videos, very entertaining, but also, showcases really good initiatives as well. There's the reading initiative that I'm thinking of that trended really well with people reading storybooks to help kids through the pandemic. And I believe that's an initiative through Save the Children. So it's interesting, though, that people like that can get it right. It's also well done, even though, you know, they don't have a full production crew. You know, I think it's just her and one person who shoots, edits, and does, you know, the same thing. And, you know, they're crawling into spaces or jumping on backs of tractors to try and, you know, get stuff on smartphones and kind of work. But I guess we've always asked this question with you, you know, why do certain things resonate and work and just others don't? Because I think no one really goes on to social media making this content, you know, hoping that nobody watches it. Like, everybody wants their content to be watched. It's just so fascinating to me, this discussion.
Well, I mean, for sure. I think when you're creating content in general, at least I, for my own content, when I'm creating my own content, my goal is to always have me and the viewer on the same side of an issue. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, we don't have to agree with each other on everything, but it's kind of a conversation where it's like, I'm not going to out you as a viewer. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'm not going to make you feel like an idiot. It's always going to be you and me at talking about something that I think is stupid. And you might agree, you might not agree. And I think that, you know, when you have a platform, especially, you know, during a time like the pandemic, when you have a platform, it's so important to use that for the benefit of the greater good. And I think that you have to, you know, be authentic, and you have to also be like, you know, this is, even though I do a lot of stuff about pandemic stuff and you know, I did stuff for AstraZeneca and all that kind of stuff, not for them professionally, meaning that I just put out a thing about vaccines saying that if I get offered AstraZeneca, I'll take it. I think it's important to kind of put that out in the sense of like, this is what I'm doing. I don't know what you guys are doing. And it's that kind of honesty that people are like, yes, we'd like to see this, as opposed to being told, you know, this is what's happening, or to be sort of, you know, again, that sort of broadcast idea where you're just sort of watching something passively. It's like, no, this is like an open back and forth, and I'm just kind of being honest about it. That's super, super powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I mean, people want people who they can turn to, and they want to know that maybe their views are on the same side as someone else. And I think you've done a really awesome job of that throughout this entire time. And I think it's, you know, it just, there's comfort in that, I think, for people, right? While we're at a distance. We do have to wrap up. I actually wish we had time for this conversation, because it is a good one. And it's so fascinating to me how some people are able to really connect online. Others maybe struggle a little bit. But most importantly, if people want to follow all of your hits, where can they go?
They can find me pretty much everywhere at Brittlestar.
You are a rock star. Thank you so much for being here, and say hello to the family.
Will do. Thanks for having me, guys.
Up next, we share apps that will help you live a happier and healthier life.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now for a look at some new and trending apps. And first up, we're going to talk about an app called Sleep Cycle. This is a great app that will help you sleep better and wake up rested, something I think a lot of people need right now. And I love this idea. So basically, it can track your sleep. It can wake you up at what they say is the most perfect time. It's available for iOS devices, Android devices. Michael, this is, I think, pretty cool, especially as so many people more and more are struggling with sleep and habits.
And I think also a lot more people want to get data and get more information so they can make more informed decisions to help get themselves more happier and healthier when it comes to their wellness. What is interesting about this app specifically is that the phone doesn't need to go under your pillow. There are some apps out there that actually does need your phone to go under your pillow, and it can track your sleep by just simply placing your device on the nightstand or somewhere close by on the floor, which I think is also really important, because again, we've covered many times on the show about, you know, turning off or leaving your phone away, putting it away from the bed, or even in another room, because it can be distracting the light, or if you've still got your notifications on and things like that, it throughout the night, it could, you know, light up or vibrate and make noise. Because I can tell you, I can hear my phone in the kitchen from my bedroom when it vibrates, and that's how sensitive I am to sound. So this app I think is really neat. Also, it gives you all of the robust reports that you would expect to get in a sleep tracking app as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I will say I've been enjoying just reading on the website because they do have so much data. The places that get the best sleep quality, New Zealand tops the list, and then it's the Netherlands and then Finland. Worst sleep quality is in Vietnam, Japan, and South Korea. So it's fascinating to look at all the data that they have. Most people sleep about 8 hours, and then 7 hours is in second place. So fun to see just, you know, how well or how poorly people are sleeping around the world. And clearly there is a crisis happening right now in terms of many people lacking sleep.
I think you're absolutely right. And there's some cool features as well that are free features in the app, because obviously there's a premium features where you have to pay for it. But some of the free features are you can select certain melodies to wake up to, which obviously can help in regards to how relaxed you are. And also customizable wake up windows, because some people are able to, you know, wake up instantly and require that regular alarm clock, or ways where it can, you know, be up to 90 minutes. It kind of gently wakes you up. So lots and lots of different choices there. And I think it's a really good one to check out. Another one we wanted to take a look at when we're focusing on this health and wellness kind of kick that I think everyone should be trying to obtain for themselves. It's called 8Fit, and it helps you become healthier and happier by putting fitness and nutrition experts in your pocket. So this is a great one because it's bringing it all together in one place. It helps you measure your fitness level and record all your dietary preferences. I'm starting to be really aware of what I'm eating. So this is a great one to track what you're eating and then to see, you know, anything that I've added in might be having a positive or negative reaction to my health goals as well.
I love that they have recipes, and some of the recipes fall into the categories of being affordable, energy boosters, high protein, lactose free. Just looking at the homepage, they have a chickpea salad, a white bean dip. It all looks quite delicious. Clearly, I have not had lunch yet because it's making me very hungry. I love this idea. I mean, listen, we're going to talk a little bit later on in terms of continuing this conversation around physical and mental health. But I think, you know, once we get out of this pandemic, I think we're going to realize is, yes, there's some people who are in the best shape of their lives. But I would say the majority of the people out there have really struggled and haven't been moving as much. And it's going to take a while to make sure that people are able to really continue to live healthy and active lives.
I think you're right. And so a lot of features packed into this app. It's got interactive videos. Of course, everything that they've got in this app is research backed. So you know it's coming from quality people. And then just simply looking at from the fitness aspect, most you know, track goals, but this actually explains how to do the exercises properly, the form and the progression. And it really does give you that full from beginning to end overview of what to do, why to do, why you're doing it, and how it's going to benefit you, step-by-step process. So a really good one to check out. It even, provides a grocery shopping list for meals. So you can keep that. So it's almost like a to-do list for your health as well.
Very cool. Okay. So the third and last one we're going to talk about is called Streaks. This is available for iOS devices as well as Mac computers. And I've actually seen this before, Michael, and it is a beautiful app. In fact, it's an Apple Design Award winner. And the idea is that it helps you actually start and keep good habits. And the truth is, if you think about everything from health to fitness to breaking habits, at the end of the day, it's almost about creating new routines. And so with Streaks, they encourage you to have positive streaks of doing things like walking the dog on a regular basis or eating a healthy meal or running, you know, a short distance and keeping up with that streak. So it's quite a simplified version, I find, of these apps that track activity, because they really do make it super simple.
They certainly do. And the reason why this one kind of sparked my interest was it wasn't from the positive side of things. It was actually because I needed some kind of different avenue to help me break some of my bad habits. And so it has that ability to create negative tasks to help me break some bad habits. And I've got a few now, thanks to COVID and you know, like everybody else, dealing with all these things that we didn't really have to deal with before. So I found this one, the way it does it too, the approach, it is also, it's not offensive. So you're able to do it in a positive and negative way when it comes to habits and tracking them and trying to either improve and maintain them or get rid of them altogether.
All right. So just a quick recap. The first one we talked about is sleep cycle. The next one is 8-FIT. That's the number 8 and F-I-T. And then the Streaks app if you are trying to break a bad habit or form a new and good habit.
Well, lots of great apps. Of course, you can always let us know apps you like. You can tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmBancroft8 and let us know apps, gadgets, and products we should check out and share with the listeners. Of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, how to find time to work out at home thanks to virtual fitness.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, staying fit and healthy is, of course, top of mind for many people as well as they deal with this dreaded pandemic, daily life, and, of course, working from home. So for a look at five top tips to help with your home and virtual fitness, Alison Bader-Solway is the founder of ABS Fitness, and she's joining us now. Now, it is tough, I have to admit, just from a personal perspective, trying to do workouts from home myself. So this is a great topic to start with. How have you found this transition? Because obviously most of the people you would normally see would be in person and now they've moved online. What are some of the things you've seen and what are some of the excuses you've heard from people not working out as often as they should be?
Well, Amber and Michael, thank you so much for having me. Virtual fitness is unique because it can be done anywhere at any time. And I think that carving out time that is non-negotiable for you during this pandemic and even post-COVID is essential, whether it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour, that allows you to exercise in some capacity. And you mentioned like excuses in terms of not working out because it's too challenging at home. I think that initially, it's the mindset that, you know, as a mother, a professional, or a woman, making time for yourself is not selfish and it's a necessary part of your overall care. And I think if we start with the mindset of making time for yourself is necessary, that it enables you to take better care of those who are in your circle, who you need to take care of. And it just allows you to be better equipped in your everyday dealing. So fitness is so crucial, especially now, because it's also such a great mental release, not just physical.
So I want to talk a little bit about ABS Fitness, because I've had a chance to do a bunch of your classes online.
Yeah.
And they're all incredible and super helpful and different lengths and all those things that you do want. Can you talk bit about your experience in terms of helping people figure out what's right for them? Because I know you mentioned, you know, 15 minutes could be okay for some people, 30 for others, 1 hour for others. How do people know kind of how to set those fitness goals and what's appropriate, especially in a global pandemic?
Well, you bring up a really valid point. And I think it really varies for everybody and what their own situation is like, whether you have young children at home or you have a really demanding job that you're doing from home and potentially taking care of your kids as well. So I think that you want to look at what's realistic for you. I don't think you should set goals that are unrealistic, that yes, I'm going to spend an hour a day working out. I think that if you incorporate it to some degree into your daily schedule, it becomes doable and achievable. And, you know, ABS Fitness is really geared towards that. I have workouts that are all types of workouts as well as all lengths. So if you only have 10 minutes to focus on yourself in a day, you can do a 10-minute ab sequence and feel like you accomplished something. So it really, it's really subjective and dependent on what you're able to do in a day. I think it's so critical, though, to make time to do it. That's the important key.
I think you're right. And it's always about like at least moving throughout the day is key, no matter how much time you have. But I guess you also mentioned a few good points. Like there's a lot of chaos happening and, you know, lots of people are cooped up and they don't necessarily have a lot of space for exercise. So do you have any solutions or what would you say to that when people are like, well, I don't really, you know, have the right equipment or enough space, or, you know, it's probably too expensive to do virtual classes?
So really valid point as well. A couple things there. You said move throughout the day. So important. Set your alarm. Get up, move, stretch every 30 minutes. Go outside if you can. Get some fresh air. Go for a walk, even if it's around the block. And to address about, you know, a small space in a home or equipment, you don't need expensive or elaborate equipment to do or to get in a good workout. You don't need a fancy home gym. So many people have used COVID to invest in small areas in their home, whether they purchase weights, resistance bands, you know, or even a yoga mat, and they will get in a great workout. And if you don't have the funds to do that, using your own body weight and working out with just your body is also super effective. You just need a little bit of space. And the beauty about ABS Fitness also is that the workouts can be done anytime, anywhere, and no equipment is required. So everything can be modified if you don't have equipment. And just along those lines with equipment, if you don't have weights at home, you can always substitute soup cans, water bottles. Be a little creative in what you use.
I think these are all great tips. And just to wrap up, the last thing we wanted to talk about, and you had shared some of your advice with us previously, is a line that I love. Virtual doesn't have to mean alone. Can you explain before we let you go what you mean by that?
Sure. So, you know, it's so hard, and social connection has been so important during this time where, you know, especially in Ontario, we're still in lockdown and not able to get together with people. But doing a workout with a partner, whether it's on FaceTime or a Zoom fitness class where you can see each other or keep your camera off if you prefer, just it enables that connection. And every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., I offer a free full body workout on Instagram at ABS Fitness CA. I've been doing it for 58 consecutive weeks now. And even though I can't see the members or the people that are doing it, it brings a sense of community, almost like when we were doing group fitness classes in person. So it's been super helpful and supportive. And, you know, it's really nice to see the same people doing it on a weekly basis. I say see in quotations, but the feeling of them being there. And it's free. It's a great full body workout, 30 to 40 minutes.
Well, listen, we just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today. Again, if people want to check out ABS Fitness, you can find them online and on social media. Allison, thank you so much for sharing your time with us and for motivating people to move more. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Amber and Michael.
Up next, we're going to discuss all you need to know about mental health at work.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, COVID-19 has had quite an impact on many people's mental health in the workplace. The reality is that even before the pandemic, employers were aware their employees were suffering from the stresses of modern life. So to share some insight into how organizations can better support their staff towards healthier mental wellness, Sandy McIntosh is the Executive Vice President of People and Culture and Chief Human Resources Officer at TELUS. She's joining us now. First of all, that's very impressive. And I imagine you have quite a lot of responsibility of many people across TELUS. This is a really important discussion. Let's start with mental health and how it's viewed currently in the workplace.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really important topic right now, as you just said. And the reality is it was an important topic in the workplace even before COVID. You know, we were experiencing a mental health crisis in Canada, and you know, lots of data around that to support that. You know, 500,000 Canadians cited mental health symptoms or illness as a reason they were unable to work, and just the impact to companies and the economy is just staggering. So this was an issue before COVID, and now, of course, more than ever, we really need to manage mental health and well-being like any other business risk, quite frankly. And I think organizations, workplaces, big or small, that really promote and look after the mental health and well-being of our teams are much more likely to be successful from many dimensions: productivity, absenteeism, happiness. The benefits are endless. They've been proven qualitatively and quantitatively by many organizations. So, since the first wave of the pandemic, even just looking at recent data, you know, Canadians are trending towards more burnout. So in fact, right recently in a recent survey, 47% of workers in Canada said they feel exhausted and over half feel stressed. So we really have a moral obligation to do something now more than ever. And sharing supportive norms, breaking the stigma, talking about it in the workplace, putting the right things in place is really a moral obligation. And we want other organizations to feel that same obligation.
I think also it's fair to say that when we talk specifically about mental health and well-being, that there used to be a lot of stigma around that conversation, and there still is. But certainly it feels as though things have gotten better on that front. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that and from your perspective at TELUS as far as the well-being journey of the company?
Yeah, thankfully, it is getting less stigmatized. Thank goodness for that. And it's hard to scroll through social media, read the news, or have a conversation these days without touching on this topic. So that's been very healthy. It's pervasive, and that's good. That's positive, and it's really helping to reduce that workplace stigma. You know, I think the era of being macho and workaholism and not taking vacation and being a hero, it's really getting passe, and that's great. So it's easier to have the conversation in organizations. It's really impossible for companies not to be open to be discussing this now, especially with this climate. About 4 years ago, and it was fortunate for us, you know, we really honed our strategy overall, and we really recognized that to address mental health and well-being, kind of have to look at the whole person, and there's many dimensions to people that that drive their overall well-being. So we looked at our well-being strategy as including physical, psychological, social, financial, and environment. And we've been trying to drive a people strategy that touches all four of those quite interrelated concepts. And by the way, it's not new to TELUS or unique to TELUS. This is in line with emerging industry best practices. So organizations can look to the National Standard of Psychological Health and Safety in the Workplace, Mental Health Commission of Canada, and all these guidelines are really laid out. So it's a great framework. But we've really, on that journey, we offer a few things: 24/7 support, first of all, to employees and their household family members, regardless of where they are on the well-being, you know, continuum. We don't wait till people really are not well. And we've invested in a lot of mental health training over the last 4 years in our journey. We did leadership training first, and then now going through all of our team members on awareness and self-care. We've got access to mental health clinicians through our virtual care programs, free counseling, unlimited subscription to the Calm app. And the one that's really jumped out and was appreciated, which we put in place before COVID, was up to $5,000 in annual mental health benefits that team members and their family can use for psychologists, psychotherapists, social workers, And it's really, we've had terrific uptake in the last year in particular, and it really goes a long way to help families. So we're trying to approach all our programs with this kind of, you know, whole self aspect in mind.
I think that's a really good point that you make, Sandy, because you've been a people leader for quite some time. This isn't something new, but it seems like it's now finally being broadly accepted and people are acting on it. So from your experience, what are some simple tips that just employees, no matter where they work, could actually, do and practice themselves to try and ensure, you know, they have strong mental health and able to get through the day?
That's so important, to give people the tools and resources at their fingertips and just make it really pragmatic. So, you know, we try to treat every week like Mental Health Week and make sure that people are practicing these tips, you know, every day of the year. And so just a couple things that we've really been talking about in the organization that have been helpful, and they sound really small, but sometimes just a few small things that you can do for yourself on a regular basis go a long way. And you don't have to do all of them. I'll list a few, but pick the ones that are meaningful and have an impact to you. So a couple things, a big one for us, especially now that we've been working from home, is to create space between work and home. Our team members have been saying to us, it's really been hard to have any kind of separation when you're, you know, walking out of a home office into your kitchen, into your family room. So we've really asked people to think about a virtual commute, whatever that looks like. So get outside, take a walk around the block, 10 minutes, go do something else and separate your brain from, you know, finishing a work day and moving into your life and into your family. Walk the dog, read a book, get outside for 10 minutes of air, whatever that looks like. Really maintain social connections. It's been really easy with the fatigue that people have felt and the, to use Adam Grant's languishing, you know, description, to not want to do social connection, but really getting a virtual coffee, go out for a socially distant walk with someone and not talk about work is an incredible good break for the soul. Movement. So we're sitting too much and we're doing too much screen time. So schedule 5 minutes between meetings, even to just move in another room, take 5 minutes of calm breathing, stretch, get up and move as much as you can during the day, especially rejuvenating. And again, the screen time is kind of killing us. So get our eyes off the screens. Netflix is not always your friend at night. Sometimes reading stories, getting the calm stories, reading a book, get your eyes off the screen to give your brain a break.
Yeah.
Eat well as well. Mind, gut health. There's a really strong link scientifically. So make sure you're eating, you know, well during the day today, all day as well.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we just wanted to thank you for joining us and talking about some of the things that can be done, some of the things that TELUS is doing as well, and just helping to raise awareness about this subject. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's really been my pleasure. Wishing you both really well and safety.
Stay with us. Up next, we're talking about Twitter Spaces if you have 600 followers or more.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we are going to talk about Twitter Spaces. If you don't know what Twitter Spaces is, we've mentioned it before on the show when we've been talking about Clubhouse. And yes, if it sounds like a broken record, that's because everybody is getting in on this audio-first game. I thought it was interesting to mention, guys, that Twitter Spaces just announced that they would give everybody access to use Twitter Spaces if you have 600 or more Twitter followers. That means you'll not just be able to use it, which you could previously, but you'll be able to host on Twitter Spaces. Michael, maybe I'll start with you because we kind of ducked into Twitter Spaces last week together for the first time. It's cool. It has potential, right?
Yeah, it's so interesting that I think that this is just a smart feature. And I think the way that Twitter has done it is smart. And what I mean by that is they didn't make it an exclusive or something that, you know, wasn't available for everyone. I like the fact that they were very inclusive with the way they've tackled the rollout. People might then say, oh, but it's only available if you have 600 plus. Well, I think that's just because of the sheer volume of this built-in audience across Twitter. Think about that just from a mechanical perspective. To do something like this, you need to have some kind of parameters before you go to launch something. Whereas if you compare it to Clubhouse, you know, it started from nothing. There's no built-in audience. They just kind of started beta testing and then invite only. Very different. I also love the fact that it's been suggested that they will have features later on where you can actually sell tickets. So again, this seems to be like Twitter has really thought about a more robust platform that could add value into something like a conferencing space, which is kind of what this is. It's or a discussion place where if you're getting valuable insight into certain topics, people can actually, just like content creators, get paid for it, or you can actually have some kind of platform where you don't have to plug in five or six other things to hold a virtual conference or something like that. So I really think that Twitter has made a really good go and a really, really thoughtful way of incorporating this audio element into their platform.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're bang on, and I was excited to read about the ticketing option. Aaron, we always kind of go to you because you work full-time in audio. Michael and I are TV people and just dip our big toe in here now and again. So what do you think of Twitter Spaces and some of these new features and announcements?
I think it's interesting. I think it's an interesting rollout. I think it's an interesting counterpoint to Clubhouse's approach, which is still invitation only. Every time I open Clubhouse, there's more and more people that I know on it. So I guess the invitations are being spread around. But still, if you don't know anyone on it, no one sent you an invitation, you're still on the outside looking in. Whereas with Twitter, there are so many people with accounts. I still know people that are against it. Not everyone's on Twitter, but so many people are opening it up to everyone with the asterisk, like you said, Michael, 600 followers or more. It democratizes
it more. And sorry, that's just
more
for like to be able to host it. That's not to access it. You can still access it just if you're on Twitter and you can participate. You just can't host something at the moment.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. As I said, I've jumped into Twitter Spaces as a listener after sports events. After a certain soccer game will end, two or three people will send out a tweet before and say, hey, this game is almost done. In 10 minutes, join us on Spaces. We'll wrap it up right now. And the immediacy of it, and I always tell people Twitter is great if you're a sports fan of any sport, the immediacy of following along with a game and the ability to discuss it right afterwards, I think is so great. I'm still mulling over in my head, what should my first space be? When should it be? What should it be? Who should I invite? But I like the rollout of the feature, and I think that making it a little more democratized and less exclusive might give it a foothold over Clubhouse. It might have it have bigger uptake sooner.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that exclusivity just makes me want to hate Clubhouse. And that's just my personality. You know, I think was it George Carlin who said made the comment about clubs and, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher it here. So let me just look it up here. But I think at the end of the day, when we think about the exclusivity of Clubhouse, I think it's really something that has stopped them from maybe getting as much growth as they should have. Because, you know, not only is it exclusive, but for so long it has been iOS only. And I think that is a bit of an issue as well.
Yeah, and I think all the features they're thinking about, you can schedule space chats in advance, you can set reminders to give your followers a heads up, you can really build an audience to ensure people know it's out there. And what I do love, again, it's this accessibility. So they have this ability to have live captioning, so very inclusive. And I think that's the different approach. That's the mindful, thoughtful platform approach that's, you know, cross-country, like cross geographies, cross different age brackets and ethnicities. I just think that they're thinking about it and approaching it in a much more positive and smart way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think at the end of the day, again, they have that built-in audience, right? And that's the key there, is that I think they're going to be able to scale at a totally different level. And that means that I just think that, you know, Clubhouse, sure, you know, it may still exist in some capacity, but I think that the timing has been a little off in terms of their willingness to really open it up to everyone.
And also the branding, and I don't, you know, Twitter seems to be more open for everyone, whereas Clubhouse seems a little bit more male orientated or a little bit bro-y. And it's just from a cultural perspective, whereas I still feel, and I could be wrong and people can tweet at me, but like Twitter still, you know, it's the first place where news breaks worldwide. We still trust and see people being able to share their opinions and thoughts openly, whether you agree with them or not, that's different. But I still think there's some kind of credibility to Twitter as a whole, more than 50% of the time. So I think that's still got a much stronger brand as well.
Absolutely. And I had made a George Carlin reference. And yes, he does have a really, really good rant about wealthy people and clubs and all of that. But the quote I was actually thinking of is from, I believe, Groucho Marx, if my Google search is right, where he says, "I refuse to join any club that would have me as a member."
You know, you've said that many times before because you had belonged to a club and we would visit it to work and stuff. And then you're like, this is silly.
I don't like when you're part of a club and they still sort of make you feel like you're still
like you really shouldn't be there. Yeah. That's kind of what it was when we went to this place and we both were like, okay, we're out.
And there's just something, I mean, to Aaron's point, there's something about not allowing people to have access to something just based on, you know, iOS users, let's be honest, they are wealthier users, generally speaking, because those devices cost a lot more. So, you know, you start there and then invite only, though you have to know someone, you know, all of the privilege associated with Clubhouse, unfortunately, kind of turns me off. But hey, listen, there's lots of people who love it. So let us know what you think. You can find us easily online at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80.
And of course, use the hashtag The Feed. This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.